The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Vision News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the NFB, Justin Young speaks out on ADA's anniversary. From ACB, Kim Charlson receives a JFK Center Award. From AFB, I'm sorry, that was ACB. AFB, what does no limits education look like? From Medical Express, new diagnostic options. From Blind Abilities, the ARA Explorer is on the blind shell. From Business Insider, a guide dog was squashed on an 8-hour WestJet flights. So let's get started. From NFB.org, reflecting on ADA anniversary and improving digital access. Tuesday, July 26th, by Justin Young. I have been a member of the National Federation of the Blind since 2009, when I was involved in the New York Association of Blind Students. I have always had a passion for legislative and advocacy work. I've held several leadership roles in the New York affiliate since 2017, and I was excited to be asked to join the national staff as a government affairs specialist in late January 2022. Some of our legislative priorities that I work on include the Medical Device Non-Visual Accessibility Act and the Transformation to Competitive Integrated Employment Act, which I gave a few updates on during the 2022 National Convention. As I reflect on the 32nd anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act as a blind person, I think of the work we still need to do to accomplish the overall goal of this law. One can argue the ADA was established to create equal access for those with disabilities. As we progress further into the 21st century, one area still needing improvements leading to equal access would be websites and mobile applications. Some tasks we might use websites or apps for are conducting research for work or school, completing online applications or forms, shopping, and electronic banking. While applying for my current employment, I had to complete a rental application via an online website that was not easy to navigate. Many of the buttons were not clearly identified with labels. There were images that didn't tell me what they were. And when it came time to complete the actual lease, it wanted me to go through it and either electronically sign or initial on the color-coded sections. Because of this, I had to wait for sighted assistance instead of being able to independently use it myself. While pursuing my doctoral program and conducting research, I came across several websites that had inaccessible PDF documents. These were simply scanned images of the article, making it difficult for a screen reader to identify the text. There are, of course, workarounds like being able to use the optical character recognition, OCR, feature of the software on my computer. But if the website managers made the document in an accessible format ahead of time, it would ensure that blind people could access the materials in the same manner as others. While attempting to apply for jobs at a New York State-based college, I found the website to be very accessible. I was able to independently edit any incorrect information that automatically generated from my attached resume, upload extra documents, and answer the additional questions. Even though I didn't get the job in the end, I was impressed by the level of accessibility from this organization, which illustrates the point that if the site is built with accessibility included, we as blind people can interact with it completely independently. The above examples are only two issues that I have experienced, but if one were to ask other blind people, I'm sure they would agree with me that it is time that Congress enact legislation like the 21st Century Website and Mobile Accessibility Act, ensuring the blind, along with other disabled Americans, may access the same information as, to engage in the same interactions as, and to enjoy the same services offered to other persons with the same privacy, same independence, and same ease of use. By doing this, Congress will help ensure the true goal of the ADA is being achieved related to equal access. From ACB.org, ACB Immediate Past President Kim Charlson, C-H-A-R-L-S-O-N, receives award for excellence in accessibility leadership from the Kennedy Center. The John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts Leadership Exchange in Arts and Disability, LEAD, awards honor a select few arts administrators, individuals and organizations whose dedication has resulted in the advancement of inclusion of people with disabilities in the cultural arts, and whose efforts serve as an example to all in the field. Kim Charlson was selected out of a diverse pool of nominees to receive a John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts Award for Excellence in Accessibility Leadership at the organization's Leadership Exchange in Arts and Disability LEAD Conference held in Raleigh, NC in early August 2022. The Award for Excellence in Accessibility Leadership recognizes a lifetime of achievement in arts access and was presented to Kim for her avid championing of audio description and lifelong accessibility advocacy. Kim serves as the executive director of the Braille and Talking Book Library, located on the campus of the world-renowned Perkins School for the Blind in Watertown, Massachusetts. She is a recognized national and international expert on accessible library and information services, Braille literacy, arts access, assistive technology, civil rights issues, and audio description. She has served as a member of the Braille Authority of North America, the standard-setting body for Braille in the United States and Canada. She served from 2013 to 2019 as the first woman president of the American Council of the Blind, ACB, and she is currently the president of the North America Caribbean region of the World Blind Union. She is particularly active in the audio description space, serving as the co-chair of the ACB Audio Description Project, as a Boston-area audio description consultant to theaters and museums. She serves on the Museum of Science, Boston's Disability Advisory Committee, and she is the chair of the ACVREP Subject Matter Experts Committee, developing a certification for audio description professionals. In addition to her many other responsibilities, she is a contributing author to the book Making Theater Accessible, A Guide to Audio Description in the Performing Arts, published by Northeastern University Press, and she is the author of Drawing with Your Perkins Brailler, an instructional book for using Braille to create tactile pictures that blind children and adults can share with sighted family and friends. In June 2019, Kim received the Francis Joseph Campbell Award from the American Library Association's Division of Specialized and Cooperative Government Library Agencies, one of the highest honors the ALA bestows. Kim recounts that one of her first experiences with audio description goes fairly far back to the earliest days of description for television. In 1986, she assisted WGBH in bringing together a small group of blind consumers to watch the first pilot of a PBS program with audio description. There were about 10 of us in the room, and at the end of the program, you could have heard a pin drop. We were all speechless, and then we all started talking at once. There was so much excitement about how we could all understand the program we just watched, that we didn't have to ask anyone else to tell us what was happening, and that, in fact, we knew and remembered better what took place than the sighted audience members. It was pure magic, and I haven't stopped advocating and working for audio description in all of its forms since that time. John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts and LEAD. As an integral part of the Kennedy Center's Access VSA International Network, the Leadership Exchange in Arts and Disability, LEAD, program advances the full inclusion of people with disabilities in arts and culture. With a focus on expanding the breadth and scope of accessible programming, LEAD provides an opportunity for professionals in the field to develop best practices and resources, engage in conversations with colleagues and experts from around the world, and learn practical methods for designing inclusive arts and experiences and environments. There is an email for Kim Charlson at kim.charlson@perkins.org. From the AFB.org, what does No Limits Education look like? What does No Limits Education look like? To better understand the difference a highly qualified teacher can make in the lives of students who are visually impaired, meet Tessia Nasehi, T-E-S-I-A-N-A-S-E-H-I, now a teacher at the Overbrook School for the Blind in Philadelphia. Tessia Nasehi sees her students the way they see themselves, as young people with no limits on their future potential. At the Colorado School for the Blind, she taught social studies to students who are visually impaired, including many with multiple disabilities. Tessia develops lesson plans that take each student's unique abilities into account. Her specialized education prepared her well, and she frequently refers to AFB's Journal of Visual Impairment and Blindness, JVIB. She says JVIB is more than a well-loved reference among teachers. I've read a lot of inspirational stories that give me some of the emotional support I might need from time to time, she says. The biggest challenges in her work are created by barriers that still exist. For example, some online tests don't include audio descriptions for elements like graphs. Students can't take a test if they don't know what's on the test, Tessia says. She advocates investing in education as a way to ensure that people who are blind or visually impaired can be independent and successful in adulthood, especially because she knows what is possible. I want people to see what our kids are capable of without giving any attention to their blindness or other disabilities, Tessia says. To see how happy they are when they see themselves succeed is extremely rewarding. From MedicalExpress.com, MedicalExpress, new diagnostic option for rare eye disease by the University of Bonn. An estimated 5 to 10% of blindness worldwide is caused by the rare inflammatory eye disease, uveitis, U-V-E-I-T-I-S. Posterior uveitis in particular is often associated with severe disease progression and the need for immunosuppressive therapy. In posterior uveitis, inflammation occurs in the retina and in the underlying choroid that supplies it with nutrients. Choroid is spelled C-H-O-R-O-I-D. Researchers at the ophthalmology department at the University of Bonn has tested color-coded fundus autofluorescence as a supportive novel diagnostic method. Fluorescence of the retina can be used to infer the uveitis subtype. This is an essential prerequisite for accurate diagnosis and treatment of the disease. The results have now been published in scientific reports. Blurred vision, floaters, and unusual light perception. Those affected by the rare disease posterior uveitis feel no pain, but the consequences can be severe. About 5 to 10% of blindness worldwide is caused by uveitis. Uveitis is a rare disease, but posterior uveitis in particular potentially has a poor prognosis and often requires immunosuppressive therapy, explains Dr. Maximilian Wintergerst of the ophthalmology department at the University of Bonn. There are different forms of the disease. In posterior uveitis, the retina or choroid in the eye becomes inflamed. While the retina converts the incident light into nerve impulses, the choroid supplies the outer layers of the retina with nutrients. Different therapeutic management. It's not easy to distinguish between the numerous subtypes of uveitis, says Wintergerst. However, since the different subtypes often require a different therapeutic approach, a reliable diagnosis is all the more important. This is why researchers from the ophthalmology department at the University of Bonn, together with colleagues from the medical biometry and rheumatology departments at the University Hospital Bonn and the University Hospital of Ophthalmology in Bern, Switzerland, investigated a new imaging technique that can assist in the diagnosis of posterior uveitis. The team evaluated color-coded fundus autofluorescence, spectrally resolved autofluorescence imaging. The CenterView Eye Care Company from Padua, Italy, provided the newly developed device to the researchers for the examinations. This process involves illuminating the retina with bluish light. The retina absorbs the light and emits it again at a different wavelength. The device measures this fluorescence and splits the signals into a green and a red component. The green to red ratio of the light emitted from each inflammatory focus depends upon, among other factors, upon the exact posterior uveitis subtype involved, Wintergerst explains. The researchers examined the eyes of 45 study participants. In all of them, the exact subtype of uveitis was diagnosed beforehand. This included ophthalmologic examination findings, laboratory investigations, serologic and radiologic findings, and in some cases, genetic and interdisciplinary clinical examinations. More reliable diagnoses with color-coded fundus autofluorescence. The researchers evaluated the green-red ratio in the fluorescence of the fundus of the eye for about 800 inflammatory foci in the eyes of the patients. Our results indicate that this ratio can be very characteristic and helpful as a marker for differentiating the various posterior uveitis subtypes, states Professor Dr. Robert Finger, co-author of the study and head of the uveitis clinic at the ophthalmology department at the University Hospital Braun. It could allow us to make more confident diagnoses in the future. This is a big step for the ophthalmology department at the University of Bonn, especially since Finger coordinates the Germany-wide uveitis registry, TOFU. Treatment exit options for non-infectious uveitis, www.tofu-uveitis-register.de, together with colleagues from Münster. The aim is to document these disease progression on a long-term basis and to develop recommendations for treatment guidelines. In the current study, we present the precise technical background of color-coded fundus autofluorescence in ophthalmology in collaboration with our international partners, says Head of Department Professor Dr. Frank Holtz, HOLZ. This technology may also allow better monitoring of posterior uveitis in the future, in addition to more reliable diagnoses. There are citations, and there's a hot link to International Coalition classifies 25 subtypes of uveitis and inflammatory eye disease. There is more information available at Maximilian W. M. Wintergerst et al. Spectrally Resolved Autofluorescence Imaging in Posterior Uveitis, published in Scientific Reports 2022. There is a document number that is very long and confusing. From blindabilities.com, Era Explorer app goes live on the Blind Shell Classic 2 accessible cell phone. Janine Stanley, Director of Customer Communications at Era, brings us the breaking news. It's a podcast. Janine Stanley joins Pete and Jeff in the Blind Abilities studio to break the news that the Era Explorer app is now on the Blind Shell Classic 2 accessible cell phone. Listen in as Janine demonstrates the Blind Shell navigation, the voice, and, of course, Era Explorer being right in the menu. With all tactile buttons, the Blind Shell Classic 2 is becoming the tactile button accessible cell phone we thought we would always have. And now Era is available in the Blind Shell Classic 2 app library. To learn more about the specials offered by Era and Blind Shell, check out the Era announcement at the hot link. Sign up for the Era Blind Shell webinar, which is over. It happened August 30th at 2 p.m. Eastern. And join the Era WhatsApp group to contribute and learn about the Era Explorer experiences. You can also check out the Blind Shell Classic 2 group on groups.io. Contact your state services. If you reside in Minnesota and you would like to know more about transition services from state services, contact pre-ETS program and transition services manager Sheila Koenig, K-O-E-N-I-G, by email or contact her via phone at 651-539-2361. There are contact informations. You can follow us on Twitter at blindabilities, on the web at www.blindabilities.com. Send us an email or give us a call at 612-367-6093. We'd love to hear from you. Get the free Blind Abilities app on the App Store and Google Play Store. Give us a call and leave us some feedback at 612-367-6093. We would love to hear from you. Check out the Blind Abilities community on Facebook, the Blind Abilities page, and the career resources for the blind and visually impaired group. From BusinessInsider.com, blind woman's guide dog was squashed in footwell for 8 hours on two WestJet flights, report says. Article by Sam Tabariti, T-A-B-A-H-R-I-T-I, published August 27th. A blind woman flew from London to Canada and back with her guide dog on WestJet. Chloe McBratney said her dog Emily was squashed into her footwell on both flights. WestJet said the third party used to book the flights did not make a request for special arrangements. A blind woman has criticized WestJet Airlines for squashing her guide dog in the footwell of her seat on two transatlantic flights, the BBC first reported. Chloe McBratney, a coach at Barrytown United's Pan Disability team in South Wales, flew from London to Canada and back with her guide dog Emily. She told the BBC she was incredibly worried about her dog's welfare on the two flights. Emily was at my feet the entire time. However, for anyone traveling on a plane, it's not enough space anyway. And then put a dog at your feet, it's even less space, she says. Well, WestJet apologized to McBratney, but stipulated that the third party she used to book her tickets had not contacted the airline to ask for special arrangements, the BBC reported. WestJet did not immediately respond to insiders' request for comment made outside normal working hours. McBratney could feel during her flight to Canada that Emily couldn't turn around properly. When I took her harness off, I could tell by her demeanor that she just wasn't comfortable at all. She was advised by the airline to cancel her tickets with the third party and book full-price tickets directly with WestJet, she told the BBC. I booked my ticket 5 months ago and then rang the airline. I requested there and then for extra legroom, McBratney said. However, she was told they could not make the special arrangements at that time, and when closer to the time, there was nothing they could do because she booked through a third party. It was an 8-hour flight. For anybody, that's a really long time. It made it incredibly hard for both her and me as well, she told the BBC. The UK's Civil Aviation Authority told the BBC that airlines are not obliged to seat passengers with guide dogs in the front row, but many do so anyway. WestJet told the outlet all guests traveling with service dogs provide us with at least 48 hours advance notice before their flight departs. Because the third party had failed to do so, McBratney's options were limited to purchasing an additional seat or upgrading to a seat with additional leg room. I have some time left, so let's find out what's new on coolblindtech.com. JMU tests technology on campus for the visually impaired, POCUS posted August 20th. James Madison University hosted a group of high school students to try out Microsoft Soundscape with hopes of figuring out whether or not college is a good fit for them. What is Microsoft Soundscape? Microsoft Soundscape is a GPS app that uses a series of ticks and bells to track every step and give directions. Microsoft Soundscapes is a free app for all users. Did James Madison University collaborate with anyone else on this project? JMU, Central Region Nordic Alliance, CRNA, Microsoft Soundscape, and Virginia Department for the Blind and Visually Impaired, VDBVI, came together to give the students a taste of college life. They slept in the residence halls, ate in the dining halls, and most importantly, learned to navigate a larger space with new technology. What was the objective of this project? Those involved hope this fresh technology will make higher education more accessible and more appealing to students who are visually impaired or blind. The overall point of us partnering with James Madison University is to help the students understand all the opportunities the university can provide when they are making choices about what they want to do post-high school, said Pam Cato with VDBVI. Her name is spelled C-A-T-O. She says the program also enhances the students' sense of independence. JMU is the first institution in Virginia to have Soundscape on campus. This emphasizes the university's vision to create an inclusive community. Google Workspace is getting new accessibility upgrades, posted August 20th. A new accessibility-focused update should help visually impaired users navigate Google Workspace much more easily, the company has revealed. What is the new feature? Rather than having the same accessibility settings universally across Office software products such as Docs, Sheets, Slides, and Drawings, you'll now be able to set preferences for each product individually. Google Workspace says it expects the change to help users of screen readers, Braille devices, and screen magnifiers ensure their accessibility settings are personalized to best meet each user's needs. Over the years, we've launched features to support our ongoing accessibility efforts to ensure our products work well for everyone, the company wrote in a blog post announcing the launch. How is the new feature activated? To activate the new feature, open up your document, spreadsheet, slide deck, or drawing, and go to Tools, and then Accessibility, and select your preferred setting. You can find a complete rundown of Google's accessibility tools at the hot link. When is the feature available? The new feature was set for a gradual rollout in rapid release domains, starting on August 15th and on August 29th for scheduled release domains. posted August 15th, Waymo adds new accessibility features to its autonomous taxis. Waymo is taking advantage of its participation in the U.S. Department of Transportation's recent Inclusive Design Challenge to implement four new features intended to make its robo-taxis more accessible to more customers. What is the first feature? The dome on top of Waymo's autonomous taxis will now be used to display the initials of the rider they are there to pick up. The feature makes it easier for passengers to identify their ride in the near to medium distance as it approaches. The display also shows a customizable car ID, which is made up of two colored letters that can be customized in Waymo's app. What is the second feature? The app will also offer turn-by-turn navigation, but not just for the driver. The customer will also get help finding the best route to their robotaxi utilizing data on sidewalks, crosswalks, and other obstacles that passengers might encounter. What is the third feature? In addition, a new distance-to-car compass has been introduced to help riders find the robotaxi where GPS might not quite cut it. It complements the turn-by-turn navigation to precisely find exactly where the vehicle will meet them. What is the fourth feature? Waymo's AVs will emit a melodic chime, which can be heard below. The feature is intended to help people with visual impairments find vehicles without requiring a shrill horn honk. In our testing, a lot of riders really loved it, Kevin Malta, a Waymo product manager, said. Not to mention that the car horn can be a little cacophonous, and so it was euphonious to be able to use this melody instead, because we didn't want to add to traffic noise pollution. The new features, Waymo says, were developed for the U.S. DOT's first-ever inclusive design challenge. Although the company didn't win, a team from Purdue University did. Malta says that the ability to implement these features in real life was the real purpose behind participating in the challenge. The Alphabet-owned company, like others in the robotaxi space, has used the example of increasing accessibility to mobility for people with disabilities as a selling point of its service. Companies have reportedly struggled to actually implement many accessibility features, and riders in wheelchairs, for instance, are still underserved. Waymo, however, says that it is committed to involving passengers with disabilities in the design and testing process in order to improve transportation equity. There might not be a human being in the front seat, said Malta, but we haven't lost the human touch in the experience. How to update Alexa, posted August 29th. When we talk about Alexa, we're actually talking about two potentially different things. One is the Alexa app, which lives on your smartphone, computer, etc. This app is how you manage settings, connect devices, look for skills, make sure you have the right music account, and generally control how the voice assistant works behind the scenes. It can also use your device's mic to listen to the voice commands and provide all the usual voice assistant services. Then there's an Alexa that lives in physical devices, like Echoes, compatible watches, speaker bars, and so on. This version of Alexa needs separate software updates for the device itself, like how you would upgrade an operating system like iOS or Android. If you're on an iOS device, go to the App Store, select your account profile in the top right, and scroll down to Available Updates. Check to see if Alexa is there, or simply choose to update all and get all your updates at once. If you are on Android, open up the Google Play Store, select your profile, and select Manage Apps and Devices. Find the Alexa app and see if an update's available. Well, I ran out of time for this week's Vision News. Be sure to listen next week. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Doris Hyde reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Vision News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.